Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, an escape pod where two bearded... An escape pod where two bearded peas plea for the places of horror films. I don't know what I meant by that. I think I was going to put like just... peas in the pod sort of thing. And then an escape pod came at the last moment because it was an alien spaceship sort of thing. And I was like,
You've given yourself a very complicated thing to say to open the episode, which is, I think... Yeah. That's where you've gone wrong. It's just there's a tongue twister. Give yourself a chance, man.
Yeah, give Pete a chance.
Give Pete a chance, exactly.
Yeah, welcome to the Horror Hangout Podcast for two bearded film fans. Watch the best 50 horror films ever and then talk about them. Wow, okay, let's start the episode. How's it going, man? Are you all right?
Here we are. I'm good,
My name is Luke Condor with Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host.
Ben Errington,
good.
Yeah, we're doing well. I'm okay, Luke. Are you okay? I mean, that's the important question.
It's the heat. I've got heat fatigue.
Yeah, you've got a couple of layers on as well.
Well, under this is just a vest top, and you're wearing a vest top as well. And one vest top per podcast is about.
It's pretty hot. Do you think just people get carried away? If we were both in vest tops, people would be like, "This is the sexiest horror podcast I've ever listened to."
Well, that's a better answer than the fact that I've got hairy shoulders and don't show them off. No, we're too sexy. Is the answer.
You should show off the hairy shoulders because I think people, you know, everyone likes something. There's a lot of people out there probably think
everyone likes something.
I love hairy shoulders.
You big piece of something, you.
You big piece of... Oh, yeah, sorry.
Ain't you something? Okay, so other horror guffs before we go on to the main film of the evening. Have you done any guffs this past couple of weeks?
Well. Well, I've watched... I saw Unsane recently.
Oh, yeah. The iPhone movie,
shot entirely on an iPhone 7. Which is incredibly interesting, directed by Steven Soderbergh, and it's starring Claire Foy in a very good, it's like a good psychological thrillery, horror-y, you know, it's good. I like it. It's very unnerving, very unsettling. I don't know, kind of like the same word. But I liked it, and you don't really notice it's made by iPhone. Like, you never think of that, really. It's just got this sort of like lo-fi, kind of a bit grainy, nice sort of look to it. But I feel like if it looked any different, the film wouldn't have been as effective for me. But yeah, I liked it. So the basic plot, do you know much about it?
Woman is stalked and goes to a mental asylum where they're telling her the stalker isn't real.
Yeah. So basically, a woman's like got a stalker. She goes to get some sort of therapy/advice. And then she ends up like involuntarily committed to like a mental institution where like people are just like...
Is it horror or is it like...
It's not horror, I guess. But it could be considered a horror film, but it's more like psychological thriller. But it does... have a few horror elements in it, and especially like towards the end it goes a certain direction. But yeah, I mean, a really good cast. I was kind of there. A random couple of cameos that I was a bit like, what? So I won't ruin what the cameos are,
Jeremy Corbyn.
Jeremy Corbyn. Jesus. David Dickinson.
Yeah. Just wasn't expecting this at all. That's okay.
Diego Maradona was in. Turned up. Yeah. So that was. I mean, it was good. I mean, there's not much more to say. I think as a, in terms of like a Lee performance, it was good. I was there with her plight the whole way. And I was convinced she was like quite a complicated character.
Insane's a bit of it. I don't know if I'd like that name. It seems a bit like a.
Oh, you're insane, are you? Well, I'm insane. I'm not even insane. I'm insane.
It's like the when you're you start a band when you're 14, you start playing guitar. You start thinking of a name. Oh, let's give a cool name. We had our band was called Reckless Erection, but insane. We had another one that was very light insane. What's it called? Pyrotherapy. Yeah, and I was like, oh god, that's such a terrible name. Such a terrible name.
What if someone had therapy by getting their balls burned? Pyrotherapy, got it. Yeah, we had one called, we never used to know how to end songs when we were writing songs back in the day. This is when we were like 16, 17. So we called our band Indefinite Ending. And that stayed with us for a little while.
Indefinite ending. What does it mean? It's got so many meanings.
I don't know, it doesn't really matter. Indefinite Ending.
See, with Reckless Erection, we were like, that's on point. Literally on point.
Same song.
Pyrotherapy. Pyrotherapy, we were trying to do like a Fear Factory sounding name. It came out so bad. But
like a Rammstein stage performance, show.
Just Indefinite like ending, I like that one.
You like it, do you? Flamethrowers coming out of your
bollocks.
Eyeballs. Bollocks. Bollocks in there.
And now on the stage, Unsane.
That sounds like Rush. And there was that. I've seen a few other things. I've been spending a lot of time playing God of War on PS4, which is
very jealous. You keep putting screenshots up, and I keep thinking, I want to play that. And then look at the price, how much it is, and I'm like, I don't want to play it that much.
You're more than welcome to borrow it after me. Yeah. I'll drop it round, mate. I'll drop it round your house. I'll come up to Manchester and just knock on your door. It's great. It looks great. There's loads of great creatures in it. Story's really good. It took me a while to get to grips because it's quite a complicated sort of like leveling up system and combat system. But it took me a while to get my head around it. And now I've kind of like think I've got my head around it. So it's great.
Now you are the God of War.
Now I am the God of War.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Your beard is looking very Kratos-y. Are you going to put some, foundation on wherever he's got on his skin?
I'll shave my head as well. So that was good. And the last thing I've really watched, I want to mention, is the new Robin Williams HBO documentary, Come Inside My Mind, which sounds a bit technical. it was sort of like about his home life, how he grew up, how he got into the business, and then sort of everything like that. But also to do with just his mind, I guess, like why there was like a pain that sort of lingered there, even though he was like one of the most hilarious people to probably have ever lived. Coming out of that, I mean, I've always been a big fan, but I do kind of think he was definitely one of a kind. So it's good to see like some of the, there are a couple of like monologues he delivers. One where he's sort of like talking to the troops doing some sort of,
Good Morning Vietnam. Yeah.
Another monologue he delivers where he's talking to a talk show host and the talk show host just says, how is your brain? Do you think you work at a different level to everybody else because your brain's firing off so quickly? And he stands up and just goes into this absolute unbelievable, I don't want to say rant, but it's just like this unbelievable performance where he's trying to sort of discuss how his mind works. And it's unbelievable. It's just like you're just trying to think about some of the topics he delivers. And it's almost like poetry sometimes. Like he's just rhyming words left, right, and center. But yeah, it's a great.
I always think of Mrs. Doubtfire. You know, with the it does like the rap with the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Used to be oil or whatever. But like, I wonder if all that came off the top of his head.
I know. I mean, it seems like a lot of it did, and it's kind of made me want to go and watch more of his stand up because I've seen bits of his stand up, but there's a lot of sort of stuff he did in the years just before he passed away that seemed pretty cool. So yeah, it's kind of, and I want to go and watch. There's still a few films of his that I haven't seen. So I've never seen The Fisher King. I've never seen...
Terry Gilliam. It's good.
Yeah, I've never seen that. I've never seen... I've never seen Dead Poets Society.
I've never seen Dead Poets Society.
Never? And yeah, so I want to go see that. And yeah, so I think I'm going to go and revisit some. And also What Dreams May Come, which I remember seeing, but I don't remember much of. So I'm going back and watching that.
What is What Dreams May Come? What is that one?
It's where he like has to go into purgatory or into hell or something to discover, to find his...
Is this the Richard Matheson story or novel?
I don't know. Possibly. It's like late 90s, isn't it? I think. Yeah, so 1998.
Yeah, it's a Richard Matheson book. Yeah, interesting.
It's a Richard Matheson book. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So, I mean, I want to see that because I have seen it. Because I saw a lot of visuals in this documentary. I was like, I've definitely seen it. So after he dies in a car crash, a man searches heaven and hell for his beloved wife. Nice. Yeah, so kind of rediscovered my love for that. And also want to see Awakenings again, which I haven't seen in a long time, with Robin Williams and Robert De Niro. So I might watch that this week.
Well, you just remind me of, I really want to watch Good Morning Vietnam now. Because at least I really love that film.
Yeah.
So I mean, speaking of documentaries, this isn't horror related, but you just reminded me of it. I watched the Eric Clapton documentary, 12 Bars of My Life, what it's called on BBC. And he was very similar. Like, I've always liked Eric Clapton. And he's the same. He had like a sort of addictive personality, you know, he sort of got into like cocaine and whatever they did in the 70s, acid and all that. But that was really good. I just really liked to watch. I really liked that he came out. I didn't realise how sort of tragic his life was. I knew that something had happened to his son, but I didn't realize that his son had fallen out of a skyscraper window. Do you know this?
Oh my God. No, I didn't know that.
So yeah, so as he was coming out of his like life of drugs and stuff, he had a little boy who, his name was Connor, Connor Clapton. And he was like one of the reasons why he was going to get sober and like become a better man and whatever. And then at some point he was in New York and his son just tripped and fell out of this 52nd floor window or something.
Oh, Jesus. 52nd floor.
Something like that. It was like stupidly high. Like he died instantly. And then he, Eric Clapton wrote the Tears in Heaven album. After that, Tears in Heaven is about his son, you know, being in heaven. And if I remember his name, when he meets him there and stuff. But like it's made that song like have so much more like resonance. I've always liked it, but now it's like, holy shit. That's why it's
How did he fall out the window? Did he just...
So he was... Apparently, I think it was an assistant or a cleaner had left a window open. Apparently, it's a very specific type of window. It was quite low to the ground. And it had like a step or something. So I think the little boy, he's in like 3 or 4, I think, at the time, was just running around the house, running around the flat or the building or whatever. And then just tripped and went straight out the window.
That's horrible.
Harsh, yeah. But other than that, it's a good documentary. It's well worth watching.
Is that on Netflix?
On BBC iPlayer. I've always liked Eric Clapton, but it's given me a much like bigger appreciation for him and sort of what he's done over his life.
What's it called again? Clapton.
It's like My Life in 12 Bars or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
He just loves having a beer.
Yeah, pretty much. So I also, man, I watched so many horror movies. Like, it's unbelievable. Yeah. I watched this. The streaming service Shudder had like a The Last Drive-In, which is a 24-hour marathon with Joe Bob Briggs, who I didn't really know too much about Joe Bob Briggs. Apparently, 40 years ago, he was on TV in America, and he's a sort of hillbilly, that's not the right word, Texan hick sort of personality. But like, he's quite erudite, and he's a very smart guy, very funny. He's a bit of like a comedy character. And he used to be on like 2 a.m. introducing these really low budget exploitation films that no one else would put on, and he'd like be the I can't remember what he's called it now, the Last Drive-In movie critic, he'd called himself. And then 20 years later, he's back on TV, and then 20 years again to today, he should have thought, let's do a big like 24-hour marathon with him, and he's amazing. Wow. Like, even the films that aren't very good, like, he'll cut in every 20 minutes and he'll like just start talking about the films. And like, he'll add like a level of like commentary that just sort of makes you appreciate the film a little bit more. Like, even if it's something ludicrous, sometimes he'll even say, this is not a good film. this is in fact a pretty shit film. But like, the way he sort of talked about them and like where the film came from, that kind of thing, it really adds a lot to it. It's still on Shudder. You can still go back and watch any of these films and it will have his commentary on there. But okay, so I didn't watch all of them, but I'll just give you a quick rundown because there was so many. Tourist Trap, which is about a telekinetic killer who makes dolls kill people, and he turns people into dolls. Potentially, we don't really know how it works. It doesn't really make that much sense, the film, like, but it was pretty good. Sleepaway Camp, I put here, maybe the best 80s slasher I've ever seen. It was a lot of fun, had an incredible ending. That was a really good film. Like,
yeah,
80s slashers tend to be good. You like see some cool kills, but then like there's always a little bit of letdown. But Sleepaway Camp was just a lot of fun, and the ending was one of the best endings I've ever seen. Rabid, which is the Cronenberg film. By this point, I was kind of tired.
I think I tuned in with you during Rabid.
Oh, so right, okay, yeah.
I think I had a sort of like spare 20-30 minutes where,
yeah,
it was just before I was heading out, I think. So I tuned in with you. So I saw this guy, this sort of Texan dude, and I watched a little bit of film with you.
Yeah,
which was cool. It was good to. We'll obviously have to do that again where we're watching a film at the same time.
Yeah, it's cool.
On the phone to each other. Yeah. So romantic.
Rabid was I don't know. I think I was a little bit bored by that point. I've seen so much by that point. I was a bit tired, but it was pretty good. The Prowler again. I don't really remember that much about it, but I remember the Tom Savini kill effects being almost too good. They were like kind of difficult to watch because they were so painfully real.
Yeah.
Sorority Babes in the Slime Ball Bowlerama.
Oh wow! About, like, now I'm interested.
It's half naked women and nerdy boys discover a jive talking imp trapped inside a bowling trophy, and they let the imp out. The imp's like a little goblin.
Jive talking imp. Was it John Travolta?
It was. You remember those boglins? Remember those toys? Boglins.
Yeah.
It looked like one of them, but it was like, "Hey, sister," we had like a proper like, "What are you talking about?" sort of voice. I'm gonna get you.
Was it evil?
It was evil. Yeah. So it granted wishes, but then like in the film's Wishmaster. The wishes wouldn't, but with a very, very like less budget sort of way. The wishes were like the bars of gold turned out to be bars of wood. Like, is that sort of like effects sort of level?
Stitch right up.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And then Daughter of the Darkness, which is Belgium's best and only lesbian vampire flick. Cat watched that with me, and that was pretty good. That was out of all of them, that was like had a bit of a, I don't know. Highbrow sort of quality to it compared to the others. Yeah, but it's good. And then last night, just to finish up, I watched Demons, which I really like. It's produced by Dario Argento, directed by Lamberto Bava. It's insane Italian horror.
There's a sequel too, yeah?
Yeah, so there's Demons 2, and then there's The Church, which was called Demons 3, but they changed the name to The Church, and then another film came out which was supposed to be Demons 3, and then they changed the name of that so it wasn't Demons 3.
Demons 3 is coming out. No, we'll change it to
they're up to Demons 6, and I think it's like no one's really sure how, because all the films aren't really related. I think apart from the first two.
That's two films I need to see, Demons and Demons 2.
Demons, mate, you'll love it because it's a proper heavy metal. It's horror film. It's just got like who's in it? So there's Billy Idol at one point. I know it's not heavy metal, but there's like a, I think there's like Anthrax or some sort of thrash metal sort of band pops in at some point. Insane gore. It's about people go to watch a film, and then in the film, this someone gets infected by demons, sort of a zombie sort of idea, and then it starts to happen in the cinema as well. And then when they try to leave the cinema, it's all bricked off, and they're trapped in the cinema with a load of demons.
Whew,
and that's and I watched Alien. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Alien. Well, yeah, I didn't bother watching that. Yeah, I did. Oh, yes, I did.
Yeah, man. Busy horror week. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you got to do that sometimes. Sometimes you get into the mood where you're just like, I'm just going to binge watch like load of films.
Yeah.
I'm much better at watching film, like a lot of films, rather than I am at binge watching TV, because I kind of feel like you watch so much of a certain show and you've seen so many hours of it. It really does feel like you're just overdoing it. But with a film, it's like every couple of hours, you're like, oh, brand new, fresh.
It's a new
narrative.
Thing.
Yeah. It's a brand new thing. Yeah, I enjoy doing that. And I'd like to do more of it. So maybe I will organise some sort of horror movie, something similar to you, maybe. Just watch like 10 things in a row.
After that Last Drive-In, I saw loads of people on Letterboxd were like making their own like Last Drive-In marathon ideas. So 12 cool. films that they would put on. I tried it and I was like, I feel like I'm being too obvious. This is going to take more thought. So I abandoned it halfway through. But,
yeah.
But yeah, I might try it too. We should do it. We should get together and
yeah. Maybe we'll do an official horror hangout one and invite some peeps to get involved.
Yeah,
on the Horror Hangout Board of Advisors
Facebook group. One or two of them.
A couple of peeps and some people too.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So we've been doing the 50 best horror movies ever. We're now on number 2 of the list.
Number 2 of the list, counting down to number 1, not number 2 of the list, as in we're on number 49.
Yeah. So, Alien. Do you want to tell us a bit about it?
Alien. Come on, Alien. So, Alien is a 1979 science fiction horror film directed by Ridley Scott, starring Sigourney Weaver, Tom Skerritt, Veronica Cartwright, Harry Dean Stanton, John Hurt, Ian Holm, and Yaphet Kotto. Yep, it's listing everybody. So during its return to Earth, commercial spaceship Nostromo intercepts a distress signal from a distant planet. When a three-member team of the crew discovers a chamber containing thousands of eggs on the planet, a creature inside one of the eggs attacks an explorer.
Lovely. Yeah. And this is what Empire have to say. It's not easy to make a film that can rank among the best in both the horror genre and the world of science fiction, but Scott and writers Dan O'Bannon and Ronald Shusett make it look easy. It wasn't simple to wrangle everything together on a relatively tight budget, but the results are all up there on the screen. The sterile environment of the Nostromo might not seem like the most inviting place of terror, but space is dark, cold, and horrifying. And H.R. Giger, do you pronounce it Giger or Geiger?
I would say Giger.
H.R. Giger's icky creation up the fright levels. And then there's that cast topped by Weaver as Alan Ripley, one of the best creations in cinema history. In the cinema or at the home, everyone will hear you scream. It's got 97% on Rotten Tomatoes, 8.5 out of 10 on IMDb. It's a pretty fucking good film, right? What did you think?
In space, no one can hear you scream in space. this is obviously one of the best, isn't it?
The second best, I'd say.
It's probably like the second best out of all the horror films that there are. I saw Aliens first, I believe. It was one of those inappropriate films that my mum let me watch. So she let me watch things like The Fly, Aliens, The Thing, I think, when I was like way too young. So I've got a distinct memory. My main distinct memory is the sound of the rifles in Aliens.
Yeah, it's got a very distinctive noise.
I can't recreate
it. Yeah. But it's like, I was going to try. That's quite awful. Good. That's better than I was going to do.
Yeah, that's a lot better. That noise is like stayed. That like noise has stayed with me, and then I played like the Alien trilogy game on PS1. Yeah. So that's kind of like stayed with me. And I think Alien was a film that I kind of wasn't. I mean, I was aware of it, but it was one that I kind of never went back to because Aliens was kind of the film that I sort of enjoyed the most out of that franchise. When I went back to it, I'm not sure what age I was at all, but completely different take, because obviously this is more like the very claustrophobic focus. People call it a haunted house movie in space. And then obviously Aliens is just like action-packed horror. This does really combine the horror and the science fiction elements, and there's just something about the aesthetic of this film. Everything about it, not just the H.R. Giger stuff. Did we say Giger or Geiger? What were we saying?
I think we're going with Giger.
Giger. H.R. Giger stuff. Jesus. Just like all of the like set design and the music.
You're hitting the head. I've written that exact same thing. The production design is the winner in this film. Everything is so spot on.
And we saw it created in the PlayStation game Alien Isolation. And I think it was then that you really came to admire just how like it's so unique, because science fiction, things like this, different screens and sort of user interfaces in science fiction, we see so many of them, but none of them have been as like iconic as this. I mean, like, now you look at it, it doesn't look futuristic as such, but it just gives it that sort of real otherworldly, I don't know, we're in space, but real sort of like different, like a parallel universe type thing. You look at it, it's like it's the future, but it doesn't feel like our future. It feels just like some bizarre, creepy, horrible future where these aliens with phallic heads are running about. And I think this film is like, I've said this about a few films on the list, But I think this film is like masterfully paced. It really, really takes its time and knows exactly when to terrify you, exactly when to make you feel, you know, you feel like there's a particular scene in this where Ripley's running and looking over her shoulder over and over again. And I kind of feel like that's the way I feel for this whole film. I'm a bit like, if I was there, do you know what I mean? Screw it. It'd be terrifying. And I just think a lot of the mythology as well that goes with this, androids, what the dudes called in the ship, I can't believe I just forgot, the engineers, just like all the mythology that goes with it is so mysterious that now it almost allows me to watch this film without having to think about Prometheus and without having to think about anything that came afterwards in the franchise. You can really just look at this film as it is and still be like marveled by the mystery of everything. And I'm thinking, this is terrifying, but I know enough. I know enough, and I don't need to know anymore. I don't need to know how these things were created. So the fact that we got that eventually was like possibly not the best. This is the second Alien film we've done on the podcast. We did do Alien Covenant, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we gave it a C, or it was middling.
We were middling, and that's one of those films that I enjoyed a lot more when I watched it, and then afterwards I started doubting myself and realizing maybe it wasn't all that good. But I think it's because I love this franchise so much. Even the bad films in this franchise, which there are some, and but there are quite a few. But
Alien 3 and Resurrection I loved as a kid. And I probably couldn't watch Resurrection now with the same eyes.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was like exactly what I wanted, like some crazy action.
There are still elements of both of those films that like I enjoyed simply because it's so familiar.
Yeah.
So like everything from this film and Aliens sets enough groundwork that even the films that aren't so good in the franchise, you can kind of, I start kind of still enjoy them because they're characters that I love. Sets like obviously the whole process of the way that aliens take their victims is the xenomorphs is bloody horrible.
So my mum and dad went to watch this at the cinema when it first came out, and my dad said, I've asked him about it a few times, he said when they went, they really had no idea what, like, anything about it. They'd seen the poster, they knew it was going to be scary, and then I was thinking, like, imagine going into it completely like fresh. Like, you start off like in the sort of crazy spaceship, and then they sort of land on the, and there's like the crazy alien, and there's the egg, and then there's a little face thing, and then there's a fucking thing that comes out of the chest, and then there's a big thing chasing around, and there's a fucking android. I was just thinking, like, imagine your mind would be blown, because there's so many, like, there's so much like craziness coming at you, and now it's like it's been explained so much, so like we know exactly why things are where they are. But I would like to see it like from completely fresh eyes. But this, watching the first one, is about as good as you're going to get, because it's so contained, the film within itself. Yeah, I really liked it. It's good fun.
Yeah, talking of cinema, my mum said she went to see Aliens when she was pregnant with me, and that I was milling about in her belly, just like moving and shit. Which is quite terrifying, considering
making the noise of the machine gun. That's why you still hear it. That's when you fall asleep, like a lullaby to you.
Yeah. did you play Alien Trilogy on PlayStation 1?
No, I don't think so. We played on the Mega Drive. We had no, it was the Mega Drive. Was it? I don't know. There's an Aliens game, and we used to, if you got killed, there's a timer running down or something. We were like five when we played this. We used to hide behind a sofa, let the timer run down, and you'd hide, and it'd be like a little jump scare with like a alien popping out of Ripley's chest. And we used to scream every time. And then like little 5-year-old kids. But I haven't played Isolation either. That's one I want to get around to.
I played quite a big chunk of Isolation, but I found it incredibly difficult, and I think I just got frustrated with myself because I think I just couldn't face it, because my heart rate was so high during it that I just, it felt like it was, it didn't feel like fun anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just felt like agony.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was like Outlast. Like, I've not played it since. So I got really into it and got into the habit of like preparing myself for it, and I figured out a way to be brave. But if you spend any time away from it, it's difficult to go back.
Yeah,
because like, I have to build myself back up again.
Can't quite remember the controls, so you've got that moment where you're like, I can't really remember what I was doing. Bloody
yeah,
hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, key players in this film. Tom Skerritt plays Dallas. He's the captain of the ship. He's first in charge. He's Mr. Action Man, Mr. Action Dallas. Sigourney Weaver plays Ripley. Interestingly, I noticed on this time around watching it that Ripley doesn't really do that much for the first 40 minutes or something. I think
no,
there's one point where she's like asserts, we're trying to assert some sort of leadership or something, but for the most part, she's kind of a secondary character for a little while. Veronica Cartwright plays the other lady called Lambert. I don't know where her job is. Probably kitchen staff, right? I don't know.
Probably there, just a little bit of eye candy for the blokes. The real characters.
Science okay. officer.
Joking.
I don't know.
Sorry.
Harry Dean Stanton and what's the other guy called? Yaphet Kotto. They play Brett and Parker. They're like the lowly working class engineers who do want to get a bit of money out of the whole thing, but they're not allowed money or something. I don't know how the bonus scheme worked. Yeah. John Hurt plays Kane. He's another guy. He's just a space officer dude.
Officer Kane. That's gotta be Kane.
So. It was nice to see John Hurt again. He died a couple of years ago, didn't he? It's nice to see him young and fresh.
Yeah.
Ian Holm plays Ash, who he's like a company man. He's like everyone's trying to get on with the business, and then there's this company man constantly getting involved, telling people what they can and can't do, even telling Dallas what he can and can't do at some point.
Yeah. So I mean, we get a very similar character in Aliens as well, don't we? The sort of company man who's like protect the assets and stuff.
An asset.
And then we got
I didn't never really knew this guy's name. Balaji Badejo. Balaji Badejo. I hope I'm not butchering that name. Plays someone called Alien. What is it?
Alien. Oh, he plays Ali. Oh, who is that dude? I knew it was just like one dude. But he passed away in 1992 as well.
Oh wow.
Age 39. What happened?
Is he like super tall? Was he one of those people who...
Yeah, I think he's just tall and long, gangly man. So he kind of like had that sort of odd sort of...
Physique.
Alien.
Yeah.
Physique. Alien man. I wonder how he got that job. You know, sometimes you're like, how'd you get that job?
You know, like the legend of where there's a whole myth where people are walking down Hollywood Boulevard and someone goes, you're perfect. You're exactly what I need. And they're like, you freaky looking fucker. You're exactly what I need.
I thought you freaky little alien man. Get in this suit right now.
So how does it start? How do you pronounce Nostromo, by the way? Because I was saying Nostromo and I was like, is that right? Is it Nostromo?
Nostromo, I think. Yeah, Nostromo. Okay. That sounds right.
Cool. So we start with the title credits, the title sequence. And I was like, there's some nice title sequence. I really like the title font, the way it comes in.
Yeah.
It was kind of nice.
Get on with it. That's what I keep thinking when that's coming in. Come on.
It was.
What is this called? Alan.
I want to see if I've come to the right cinema.
Yeah.
We have 20 minutes in. Okay. So we start with like this giant, no way else to describe it. It's a fuck-off big spaceship. And it's like massive, and I was like, wait, there's only 7 people in there. Does it seem a bit big, or does it look big?
It's probably got a load of stuff in there, mate, isn't it? Load of tools and other stuff.
You can tell it's highly advanced because it's very squiggly. Like there's no smooth surfaces or anything.
No, there's a lot of squiggles. So it's called a space tug, apparently. So, which is also the name of something when you get lonely out there.
So it starts with these people who just waking up from a couple of space tugs. They've all been in hyperstasis.
It's weird, isn't it? Stasis. I'm still baffled by the whole sort of idea of it.
Would you drop out for a couple of weeks stasis every now and again?
Because what do? You have a bit of dinner, right? Because there's a bit later on when they're talking about going back into stasis. Like, I'll have a bit of dinner before I go to stasis. Is that dinner just with you the whole time? Is it just in your belly?
His cheeks, like a hamster. And then whilst he's in stasis, if he fancies like a bit of chicken, he just sort of...
It's weird that it's like, what's going on in stasis? Like, what is the food inside your belly doing in stasis? This is a really weird question for me to ask, but I didn't think about it. Is that food in stasis as well? Do you defecate?
They must be on some sort of like IV drip or like some amniotic fluids around him or something.
It's weird, Nick. You usually wake up absolutely hanging, don't you? You're like, bloody
hell. You slept too long, you got a headache.
Yeah.
These guys just feel it.
Imagine that, but times 1 million.
Yeah. Oh, times a million. Yeah. Where's the Profen?
Where's the Profen?
Get me a Norofen. So then they all sort of wake up. I think it's John Hurt who gets out of bed first. Early bird to rise. Yeah.
4 Weet-Bix, he has.
That's all right. It's 4 Weet-Bix.
Yeah, he's well hungry. He's like, yeah. Oh. It's 2 Weet-Bix usually, 3 Weet-Bix special occasion, 4 Weet-Bix after stasis.
Right, got it. So they all kind of wake up. They're on the sort of white pants and white shirts. And then they sort of, they sit around like a breakfast table, and it looks very low key. It doesn't look high. It's not very Star Trek, which I really like. It feels very much like an oil rig, sort of. You can imagine people on Deadliest Catch, between catching king and crab, they're like sitting there with these lunch boxes and stuff. It's very similar sort of feel.
Yeah, definitely.
So
I like it.
They're on their way home. They're on their way back to Earth. They've been out tugging somewhere. Now they're on their way back. I don't know what they've tugged.
Oh.
Oil? Space oil? Space gold? Something?
Yeah, something like that. Some sort of delicious mineral. I don't know.
Nesquik. Maybe. They just took a load of Nesquik. So they get like a... One of them says, oh, we've got a distress signal in the other room. It's a planet LV-426. It's distressed or something. Some guy down there, he's fallen down a well. He's tripped up. He's hurt his
help!
Knee.
So basically, around about this time they realized that they were woken up early by Mother, who is the sort of computer program that controls
because of the distress signal, right?
Because of the distress signal. So obviously they're all a bit like, oh, can't wait to get home. Going to be top quality. Going to catch up on all Love Island and everything. I've been recording it. And then they realize they're about halfway home, which everyone's pretty annoyed by, aren't they?
Yeah.
And it's company policy, apparently, to... any potential distress signal be investigated. And obviously a few of them are saying, I don't get paid enough for this shit.
Yeah, Harry Dean Stanton and Parker. Yeah, Big Parker's the other engineer guy. They're saying they want some bonus, but they're not allowed it. Or they were saying, unless we get paid our bonus, we're not going. And then Ash is like, if you check your contracts, you'll see that we have to, regardless, and you won't get a bonus. So suck it up. So then they fly down to LV-246 and they crash a little bit or something. Something snags or something breaks in the low base.
They mug themselves right off. They hurt the ship. I was about to say. They fucked the ship up as well, didn't they?
Ow, my ship!
Ow, the bloody ship's been. No, be careful!
The ship grazes its knee, and then. So whilst they're down there, which is like LV-426 is this horribly, doesn't like a place where anyone would be. It's like, I don't know, Blackpool. It's almost like bad as, you know.
I knew you were going to go for something like that. Basically, there's a massive great big tower in the middle and you're like, oh, bloody hell, what an eyesore. Have you been to Blackpool?
I have a few times, yes. Have you? A couple of things trying to fuck my face.
What are you doing dissing it then? You obviously love it.
I told you about the time we went and we played in the band. We didn't have anywhere to stay. And we stayed
you did tell me about
potential
this.
Potential
crack den. Yeah, that was the name of the venue. Potential crack den. Did you ever go on the big one?
No. The big
Dipper. What about the roller coaster?
Neither. I remember it was good. I remember drinking a lot and I remember walking down looking for somewhere to stay and all like the little B&Bs just said like occupied and then
they kept turning their signs around as you were sort of looking in.
At us with our instruments and went, not for you.
We don't want your kind in here.
so who goes out? John Hurt, his character Kane, Dallas. It's the other woman, isn't it? It's a chef.
Yeah. So Kane and Lambert, which sounds like some sort of cigarette brand. they head to investigate. Obviously when they're on this thing, they see like this huge derelict, which is now is obviously a very iconic image.
Airplane pillow.
Of the IP. Of the ship. Of the ship, which looks like an airplane pillow. Yeah. A massive airplane pillow. And all I keep thinking about that when I see that is, do you remember when it was rolling in Prometheus?
Yeah, yeah.
And Charlize Theron didn't realize she could just run sideways to get out of the way. She got flattened by it. But it also looks a bit like a big toilet seat. Like it a clip-on toilet seat for like a kid who's potty training.
A nipple ring? A horseshoe?
Yeah.
Omega? Is it the sign? I think that's the Omega sign. Many things it looks like.
Good. If you were playing a game of Whose Line Is It Anyway with a prop, you'd be doing really well so far.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's pretty big as well. Maybe not as big as the Nostromo. I don't know. Maybe it's massive. So anyway, they go inside and it's like, hang on a sec, who's that dude? There's a dude on the what we now call the space jockey. He's sat, he's got his helmet on, his little gas mask. It feels a bit weird now that we know exactly who it is. Even though he seems much bigger there.
Yeah, he's mahoosive. He's like a big giant man, and obviously he's dead, frozen to death.
The idea of like not knowing anything about him and thinking like he's almost like a giant fuck off god species thing. I find that way scarier than knowing who he is in Prometheus.
And I kind of like thinking that perhaps this species didn't have really any connection with the Xenomorph. They just like discovered them.
Exactly, and it killed them. Like they got infected by it. That sounds really scary.
Like they found it and maybe they tried to like keep them or weaponize them or anything and it ended up killing them. I mean, that's a much better story than they like created them as such.
Yeah.
Through a series of really ridiculous coincidences that just happened to create this perfect organism. So like the mystery of it was great. But at the same time, I didn't feel like it, as I said before, I didn't feel like it ruined this film for me that much. I could still look at it sort of subjectively.
Yeah.
As a filmo.
As a filmo, yeah. And so at one point, Kane finds a hole in the ground or something and he says, I'm going to go down there. He gets goes down on a rope, trips up, and he finds like thousands of eggs. They look like a bit like eggplant sort of shapes and stuff.
Yeah, so it's weird. They're leathery.
They are, yeah.
They're leathery, moist. Almost like moist.
Dripping.
Dripping. they look like a lovely, perfect boiled egg. When you sit the soldier in, and it kind of overflows all the yolk.
Yeah.
It's like that, but it's filled with a killing, a horrible alien thing.
It's got a sort of like an anal quality on the top.
I mean, there's a lot of sort of like sexual. I mean, there's a lot of phallus shapes, a lot of anuses, probably a lot of vaginal stuff as well. H.R. Giger was going to town. I mean, I've seen a lot of his other work as well, and it's all kind of the same. All very sort of like fetishy.
Yeah,
penal, and leathery.
Yeah.
Whips and chains excite me. All that sort of stuff. Oh, he's a kinky bastard, wasn't he?
Yeah. But like I said before, like the design is like so sort of, I think the fact that it's got a sort of sexual element to it just adds to the sort of, like the sort of, not the horror, but the sort of, I don't know if I want to get anywhere near that egg thing. I don't know if I want to go anywhere near that alien shit.
I mean, obviously the sexual connotations don't just stop with the visuals. Mm. Like the way the alien impregnates people, like, and it's all very sexual, and I don't want to get an STI from anyone, let alone an alien being, you know, because it's awkward. It's awkward when you got to text everyone you slept with.
I
think I might have had a STI from a xenomorph, so just
crabs.
What I'd say, space crabs, you probably need to get tested before you go anywhere, and if you have chest pains at any point, you're fucked.
Don't worry about it, you're fucked.
Don't worry about it, you are fucked.
As what's his name, John Hurt, is looking at one of these eggs, it becomes kind of like translucent as well. I don't think they really did that in any of the films as much as in this. Like you can see the face hugger, is the technical term, I believe. When did it become called a face hugger? Is that something we the fans made up, or is that like,
I don't know, I think maybe it was something we the fans made up,
because one's called like xenomorph, like it's a very sort of scientific sort of, this is the xenomorph, and what's that? Oh, yeah, it's the face hugger.
Yeah.
It's a face cuddler.
It's the face hugger. I mean, it doesn't hug. I mean, it hugs your face, but at the same time, it does unspeakable things.
It's a very rapey way to say. That's a very rapey hug.
It's very rapey. I used to find these kind of a little bit more scary than, because these are very, like, obviously, like spider-like, lizard-like, and obviously It's got like a vagina on it, on its underside. Very hand-like as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's loads of creepy things sort of all combined. And even though the Xenomorph is like a great design and it is super, super creepy, I think these face huggers are bloody horrible as well.
It's like spiders that jump. Like I can, if cat says there's a spider in the bathroom, I'm happy to pick him up and stuff. But it's the ones that jump are like too fast.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, ooh, Jesus.
Got no time for that.
And especially the ones that try to have sex with me.
Just yeah, the ones. too forward. All right, mate. You're not even supposed to be in my house, let alone in my body.
Yeah. Okay. So go on.
But also the worst possible thing as well. They got bloody acid blood. Jesus. Yeah. As if these things can get any worse. Yeah. I'm just gonna kill you. Brilliant. Oh no, you've got acid blood that eats through 900 floors.
Yeah. So as John Hurt is inspecting the egg, one of these things jumps out, jump scare. The facehugger gets on his mask, on his like spacesuit, and then they sort of go back to the ship. It's weird because that happens, and then we don't really see too much from that on and that point on until they're inside the ship.
No, so we don't see the aftermath. We don't see Dallas and Lambert sort of go in to help him and bringing him back to Nostromo. We kind of just see as soon as they get back to the ship and they try to bring him aboard. Obviously, Ripley is giving out the old quarantine regulations.
This is the first point I think Ripley really comes into like as an active character. She says you're not allowed to bring him on because it goes against protocol. Like you've got like an alien infected dude. We can't bring him. Yeah. On the ship.
Come on, man. I know we got an alien infected dude.
You're not
dude,
even
but
allowed to go to like uncontacted tribes without like certain regulations. Because like people die. Like we get like space colds and flus and whatever.
Space colds.
Yeah.
Come on, man. I know he's been infected by an alien, but I can vouch for him. He's a cool guy. Just bring him in. No. He's not allowed in.
Yeah.
But I know you're superior and I'm going
to... Yeah. So it's Ash, isn't it? Who just overrides and lets him in.
Yeah, Ash, obviously, that's the first point. You start to feel a bit suspicious of Ash. What's his agenda here? He's just letting him in. Well, because if anyone was going to like, he's obviously the company man. You'd think if anyone was going to be cool with the quarantine regulations, it would be Ash. But he's the one who just basically underhands her. I mean, that's a bit, it's a bit sexist at that point. And it's, oh, woman in charge, is it? Don't think so, mate. Open a door.
Yeah. And then Ash, with his little red hat and his Pokeball, it's like we know he wants to do something with that. He wants to catch it or something. So,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
They bring him on board. I think it cuts to a little bit later. Oh, no, Harry Kane is on the table.
Harry Kane's on the table going, you've had a good World Cup, mate, but you've got a bloody alien on your face now, and it's Russian.
So they got Kane on the table, Ash and Dallas, I think it is, trying to get his thing off his face. And that's when he used like a space laser to cut at the leg. Like it looks like a proper long finger. And then the acid pops out. And then he goes, oh, but yeah. And that squirts down many floors. And then he realizes they just can't take... He's going to melt the dude's face off if we try and... Also, he tries to like strangle him if you try and take it off. It tightens up.
It's a real dirty bastard, isn't it, really? He's got himself into a right pickle. So they're just like, we're just basically going to have to leave it. Do they really know why? Leave it until when? And they're just going to leave it until...
I think they pretty much decided to put him in a sort of stasis, don't they?
Deal with it later when we get home. We'll go... Oh, great, guys. You've all got back from a... To be fair, it would have been a good idea. They would have averted a lot of bother if they would have just done that.
What, frozen? Oh, well... They could have been infected Earth, though. If they...
That's a good point. Bloody Earth. Fuck it, you know? Yeah. What else? What should they have done then? Just melted his face off?
No.
He was already impregnated with the thing. So they might as well have just flamethrowed the shit out of both of them.
Yeah, I mean, if it was the thing, they would have done that.
Because that's the answer to everything, right?
Yeah. So they leave it anyway and they go, let's deal with him later. And then they come back and it's left his face. And they see him in the corner smoking a cigarette.
Was that good for you? Yeah, but then it's on its own and it's dead, isn't it?
Yeah, flopping about like a dead thing, like a dead fish. And then they dissect it. Ash, that's when we see his vaginal qualities.
Yep.
Does Ash say, I reckon it's laid an egg?
I don't know. I'm not sure if he does. He just kind of goes, oh, it's like a bloody vagina in there. Jesus.
Yeah.
I feel like a gynecologist at an orgy.
So he, I think they just kind of think like, okay, well, Harry Kane's getting up now.
Yeah. So he kind of wakes up and he's just like, a little bit, oh, bloody hell. That was quite an ordeal. But they're kind of like, oh, thank God you're all right, mate. No one suspects anything other than the fact he's just survived some sort. An alien's attacked him, but now it's let go, and that's it.
What else can you do? I mean, I probably would have quarantined him for a little while before they invited him to cough all over their food.
Yeah, they pretty much invite him straight back to dinner. They go, look, we got a load of spaghetti hoops, and we're all going to eat them before we all go back into a lovely relaxing stasis.
Yeah,
and get back home. Thank God this whole ordeal with the alien is over.
Yeah, so they're eating their meal. John Hurt's eating his Weetabix. About halfway through, he starts to go, this Weetabix is a bit claggy.
he can't put any milk on it. He's just literally eating the driest Weetabix ever.
It's like pure dust.
Did you know that? I'm changing the subject completely. Did you know that some people butter their Weetabix?
No, they don't. Yeah, that's not a thing. What do you mean? Just help it slide down like a snake.
Apparently, yeah. A bizarre snack was revealed in the survey of the nation's most unusual eating habits. So, there were some weird concoctions. One of them was a Mars bar sandwich. But
I could picture that because bread is just go either way, sweet or sour. But
peanut butter and bacon sandwich.
I've heard that's good. I've heard peanut butter with a pickle on a sandwich is meant to be surprisingly tasty.
That's interesting. Gherkins and ice cream is another one. But yeah, buttered Weetabix is one of them as well. Which that's a little bit mental, isn't it?
I don't understand. So is it a fair bit of butter and they're kind of mixing it, like whisking it up or something? Or
no, I think it's just buttered on top, as in like a bread. Using the Weetabix as if it was like a Rivita of sorts and buttering it.
It's too dry and flaky.
No, it is.
You're going to have some serious butter on there to stop it.
Some people out there are enjoying this, all right? And do you know what you should do? Just let them enjoy it.
Yeah.
No matter how mental it is.
Yeah. Okay. If you give it a coating of sort of margarine, you could... I don't know. It's just too much for me. Okay, so halfway through, he's like, this is too claggy. Parker, isn't it Parker? The one of the engineers is like, dude, the food's not that bad.
He does pretty much say that.
Yeah.
Hey, man, this food ain't that bad. And he's like...
Yeah. And then his chest pops. It's pretty effective little scene. I think it's maybe one of the most iconic scenes you can ever think of, actually.
Yeah, because we've seen this dozens of times since, but this is still the sort of best and the most iconic one. Again, this film's a masterfully paced, but even this sequence is masterfully paced because there's choking, convulsing, people holding him down, him just like screaming, and suddenly we just get this sort of like splash of blood on his chest before the actual burstage. And then after the burstage, the one iconic and horrible thing for me is John Hurt's fingers in the background when he's like twitching. Okay.
Yeah.
He's like immediately dead.
So again, my parents, they were to watch this, they had no idea. What the fuck were they thinking was happening at this point?
What even is this?
Yeah, dildo pops out of this guy's stomach. Also, did you know Lambert's reaction, the woman, she, there's blood like properly splashed on her face. I saw or read a little while ago that she didn't know, they hadn't told her what was going to happen. So when it pops and like you see her reaction and you hear her voice, she sounds like genuinely like,
oh God.
That's her saying that. It's like a genuine like, oh my God, I don't understand.
What's happening. Have you actually killed a man for this film?
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously she tries to, is it her or one of them tries to like kill it or hit it with something? Or I think someone tries to kill it immediately and Ash goes, no, don't hurt it. Don't touch it.
Yeah,
and then it kind of just like it's runs off.
It's probably this like sort of like a like it's so sudden and like we don't see the wave, but it just seems to sort of like slide across the floor.
Yeah,
it's yeah.
Oh, and done it grow up quick though. I mean, the xenomorph grows up quick these days, doesn't it?
Within 24 hours, right? It's like
within 24 hours, it goes from being a tiny little baby one to a big, tall, muscular, penis shaped.
Also, notice how from here on out, everyone is always sweaty. Like, from here on out, the ship must get very hot. I don't know why. Like, everyone's always sweating after this point.
They're just like, slam the aircon on. No, I ain't got time for that. We all might die at any point.
Maybe it's because the alien is in the AC, in the aircon. It. Yeah, breaking it. Up in your AC, breaking your shit.
Up in your AC.
Yeah,
so then we get a little while where they're sort of trying to sort of find it, aren't they?
Yeah.
Trying to locate it, capture it, nets, cattle
pods. Like a box of cat food, cat pebbles.
Yeah.
Here. And then there is actually a cat. What's his name? Jones, Harry Dean Stanton's character.
Well, the cat is Jones, isn't he?
Oh, okay. What's...
Jones is the cat. Harry Dean Stanton is Brett.
Ah, okay,
Brit. You know, Brit, like Britney. Brit. No, like Britney. Oh, yeah. No, Brit. Oh, right.
Your beard is good, and
your alien's good.
So they the two engineers and Ripley are searching for him in like the lower levels. Very creepy, kind of again like oil riggy. Lots of like water coming out from somewhere. I don't know why there's water popping
out. Yeah, I find that weird. There's like water pouring down, which Brett sort of has a little shower in.
Yeah,
which is nice.
Has a little strip down. So at some point he's looking for the cat Jones. Jones has scared one of them, and he's ran off. And Harry Dean Stanton is looking for the cat. And
Does the cat go into stasis as well?
It must do. We don't see it come out of stasis. It's got like a cat flap in the side of the ship, and it just goes in
unless,
there.
Yeah, unless it just like they've because otherwise it'd get hungry, wouldn't it?
I mean, it would die. Maybe they've got all those machines where it puts
the places, food. Pull, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's good thinking. We'll never know. Secrets of Alien that we need to find out. Does Jones go into stasis as well? He's a prick though, isn't he, Jones? He's always like muck. He's always scaring people. He's always like roaming about.
Yeah, he's a moggy, isn't he? He's a wild cat.
Moggy bag. Yeah.
Okay, so as poor old Harry Dean Stanton is looking at his cat. The cat like starts hissing, and then we get the xenomorph pops down from behind and kills him. But like, we get the first shot of like the dripping mouth, constantly dripping mouth,
salivating.
So I'm gonna fucking eat you.
Oh, I ain't eating anything all day. I just got a lovely lasagna in a microwave.
Yeah. I've just grown to an adult in 24 hours, and I'm fucking starving.
When you have a lovely dinner, do you open your mouth and a tiny little Luke head comes out?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, my tiny Luke pops out every now and again for a meal.
Just pops out to say hello, and then it goes back down below.
So the design of the mouth is bizarre, really. I mean, it's got a sort of Pez sort of quality to it now. When I look at it, it's very square, this thing that comes out. But, like, it's still scary. It's still, like, again, like, mind-boggling.
And here I think we see the alien in a lot more positions that we don't see in the rest of the franchise. It's very upright, isn't it? Very upright, a lot. There's a lot of upright bits, a lot of sort of very humanoid sort of, like, reaching and grabbing and things. Where I think in Aliens we saw a lot more on all fours, more sort of, like, lizardy.
Yeah,
sort of creepy things. And I don't think they kind of went back to this. I think it kind of stayed like that. And then obviously in all the newer films as well.
Isn't it to do with like who the facehugger, you know, has sex with? Like, it depends on... Because I can't remember where they would have come from in Aliens. But
yeah,
Alien 3 was a dog, I think.
Yeah, so it takes on sort of like weird sort of traits of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alien Resurrection, I really can't really remember where they got the xenomorphs from in that one.
Yeah, they're swimming at one point, weren't they?
Yeah. Tadpoles.
Michael Phelps.
Yeah. Okay. So Harry Dean Stanton has been done.
He gets kind of taken off up into the rafters, and there's like chains hanging down and all that. And obviously all the rest of the crew come in to find him, realize he's fucked right off.
Yeah. So at this point they all gather, I think, in the meeting room. They're all sweating now. Really getting hot and bothered, and they're like, what should we do? Well, someone says, pass me a flamethrower, I think.
Yeah, pass me a flamethrower, mate. That's how we're going to sort it. Have you not seen The Thing? Even though that's like 3 years later.
Yeah.
In The Thing, you know, that's how we deal with things around here. Alien beings just burn the
shit
out of us.
Is that what it is? They're like, it's fucking hot. It's in the fucking AC. And then they sort of go in. What's his name? Has Dallas, Captain Dallas, goes with the flamethrower into it. It's got the... like a little thing that beeps when something moves nearby. Is that how it works? So
the motion tracker thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Beep, 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 beep. Oh, God, someone's reversing. That's all it is. Someone's reversing.
Yeah. Yeah. So he goes into the air vents to find this thing. And then we got those things where, like, we can see the dot, like the Pac-Man sort of POV, Pac-Man of view. And then it's, I don't know how it works, because like he's trying to get away from it and we don't know where it is, and he said it should be right on top of you, and then it suddenly flashes.
Yeah.
Everyone's got like a strobe effect at times, and it sort of just sort of reaches out. It does a proper,
it does a proper, I just want a cuddle.
Yeah. He wants a hug, yeah.
Yep.
And then we don't see anything that will happen to Captain Dallas.
No. Nope.
See how it disposes of him.
No. Nope. We just realize that he's gotted.
He's been gotted.
He's been gotted.
So now, okay, I think this is coming towards the middle of the second act, and I think this is where Ripley really starts to step up, right?
Yeah. So I think Lambert is get panicking a little bit. She's like, we should all abandon ship, escaping the little escape, the little small shuttle they've got.
Yeah.
Ripley's like, ain't going to take four of us, mate. So she's like, let's draw straws. Oh, that sounds like a great game. Like, I'm just going to be left on my own on the ship with an alien.
Oh, God.
Great. I'm well happy about this. Best of three? Best of five? Do you know what I mean? Just like, so yeah, then they pursued a plan, which is basically to just flush out the alien. But then Ripley does a little bit of digging, does a little bit of detective work in the background, goes to Mother's soul, goes into the Mother's, like, the central hub with the computers and stuff, does a little bit of digging. And luckily there's some protocol with the computer where if you type in the right thing, it'll just tell you what the secret plan is.
The password. And then it tells her... Oh, that's what it says. So it says... the main thing of this mission was to get the perfect organism, and all the staff are expendable.
Yeah, exactly.
And as she's doing that, what's his name? Like, is behind her. He's got a copy of Nuts magazine or something. He's sort of I don't know. He's sort of like, what's that called? Scrunching it up. And it's bad girl. Bad girl.
Naughty. Naughty, naughty, naughty. But she's pooed in the corner and just puts her face in it.
Yeah.
Don't do that again. Yeah, so obviously he starts throwing her about, like back and forth, a bit like WWE, sort of like big sort of throws. And then obviously you realize, hey, something ain't quite right about him. He's kind of like, he's gone emotionless.
Yeah.
He's kind of just fighting and he tries to
shove the magazine in
tries to shove the magazine in her gob, yeah. So he's like rolled it right up tight and he's trying to like jam it into her throat.
Yeah. I suppose would that kill you? I guess
if it chokes you, then that's it. But yeah, so Parker intervenes and they all sort of start fighting him and they sort of smash him about. But then Parker's got like some sort of heavy pole or something.
Fire hydrant or something, right?
Fire hydrant, yeah. And he just smashes Ash in the head and it knocks his head loose. And he's like, clearly, when we just revealed he's an android.
Yeah. I just pictured my mum and dad like, what?
What's happening? Yeah. With milky blood as well.
Yeah.
Which is, again, another sort of really good and iconic sort of decision that has been made for the look of this film. And it's great because it looks bloody horrible.
It's interesting because looking at the technology in the rest of the ship and stuff, it's all very old CRT monitors, like little views, like stack rack mount sort of devices and whatever. And then the inside of the Android is like, I don't know what they are. Like, it's like cables, but there's also like little, they look like blown like condoms sort of air. Like, it looks like the inside of like a bleached orange segment or something.
Description.
Yeah, thank you.
So yeah, then they basically, after Ash's head has been lopped off, they jump start it. He's pretty much dead, but then they jump start it to try and sort of get information from him, even though he's just like a severed head. And he says that he was assigned to ensure that the creature survived, which makes you kind of think, bloody hell, this is like quite an intense sort of plan. We're going to send these guys to space, then they're going to intercept this. It's just all a bit intense, isn't it? So I'm assuming that there wasn't a distress signal at all.
So was that the entire reason they went out? Maybe that's why they weren't tugging anything. Yeah. I don't know what they were coming back from.
They probably had to do something, but it was obviously just some sort of ploy.
Goose chase.
But then he sort of he talks about the xenomorph a bit, saying it like it's unhindered by conscience or morality.
I love it.
I bloody love this organism. It'll just get an organism all over you.
And he says they've got like no chance against the perfect organism. And obviously Ripley cuts off his power, but like slaps him in the face. But when she does that, it like cuts away, and it's clearly like a
prosthetic.
Like
a fake thing.
Prosthetic. Yeah, yeah. It looks a bit weird. He's a bit like, hello. And then Parker burns the shit out of him again.
Yeah, and then like the skin sort of peels away to reveal the sort of android head beneath. It's really effective. It's very good. So at this point, Lambert and Parker get dead. I'm trying to remember what happens to them.
So Parker and Lambert are killed by the creature. They're sort of gathering supplies and the creature comes down. Lambert kind of just looks up at it screaming for bloody ages. then the alien kind of grabs hold of Parker's throat like the Undertaker. Yeah. Strangler, you little shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then they basically both get killed. And then Ripley initiates now Ripley's the last one left. She's the final girl in this sci-fi jaunt. Going back to the android stuff, I do like the undercurrent of the like androids being so sort of drawn to the xenomorph. I think that's a really good sort of feature within this franchise. I know obviously we get a lot of it in the later films with Michael Fassbender's character, David. But I do like the undercurrent of having these androids there, and how the androids are almost like the undoing of the humans, just as much as the xenomorph.
Yeah, they're like just as much as the enemy is the alien.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's interesting because they like the way Ash was talking about the xenomorph, saying how perfect it is, like that, like you said, like that sort of relationship with them sort of appreciating the aliens, apart from Bishop. I don't think Bishop
right, wasn't he? Bishop was like, you aliens, you suck.
Yeah, not a fan. I don't care for him.
He was a better model, though, obviously. He was a more advanced model. He was good at doing that knife thing.
Yeah. So, by the way, did you know the story of how James Cameron pitched Aliens?
Don't think so.
So Alien had done really well. Apparently this is true. Yeah, but it might not be. Who knows? So James Cameron said he went into the room to pitch the sequel, and he wrote the word alien on the whiteboard, and he went like this, and he put an S, and then he looked around the room,
and he went,
and then he drew two lines down the middle of the S to make a dollar sign.
Oh,
and then apparently that's the
And then he wrote part two, part three, part four. Part five, part six. It's the new Avatar. And then blue people, is that legit? He did that with the S and the dollar sign.
I legitimately heard about it. So, yeah.
Well, I believe you, mate. If that's the case, I believe you. Wait, did you hear about it? I legitimately got a memory of that one time hearing about something similar to that. Well, that's exactly. Just all the evidence I need.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, so at this point, Ripley is alone. I think the ship is about to blow up.
Yeah,
I think she tries to stop it from blowing up.
Yeah, she's trying to stop it. So she's like, she's gonna go with the take the cat. She's like, come on, Jonesy, let's get out of here. But yeah, she tries to abort the self destruct. Do you know why that is?
I don't know. I think
it's when she realizes the alien's blocking her path to the shuttle that she goes, oh bloody hell, I'll take it back.
Okay,
so she tries to abort it, but she's like. She kind of does do it in time, but it doesn't register, does it? The ship like continues to say, "I'm still gonna self-destruct here, mate."
I don't care what you type in me. I'm gonna do it anyway.
I'm gonna do it anyway. Yeah, mother, yeah. You slag.
Yeah. So she gets into the escape pod. I think she realizes that she left Jones out. Would you go back for the cat if you knew there was a killer alien?
It's hard to say, innit? We don't know what kind of relationship she's got with this cat. Exactly,
yeah. I mean, if it's her cat, I can see the bond. But if it's just, it's the fucking moggy ship cat that...
I might go, Jones, come on. Well, I tried.
He's fucking pooed all over that workshop downstairs.
Yeah.
He keeps pissing on my clothes. Fuck him. But anyway, she goes back for him, gets back in the escape pod. The escape pod leaves in Nostromo. We see the Nostromo implode.
Mm-hmm. Unsanely implodes.
Unsanely implodes. That's a band name.
Yeah.
And then, and then we get the idea like it's done. We're done now. This is the film done.
Yeah. Alien's she escaped. Dead. Thank God. I mean, it would have been a great ending, but
yeah.
No.
It's weird that we see the alien. When we see it, it's just like taking a nap. It's just like hiding.
Is it
out.
Taking a nap? Because I remember I used to think it was like stuck. I don't know why. I used to think it was like kind of stuck somewhere. And I mean, was it asleep?
I think. Well, I always thought it was like a
having a nap.
Like asleep, but in a sort of like insectoid way, like insects like to get in like little, like under little corners and little nooks and crannies and stuff. I thought it was like that, but maybe it's stuck.
I suppose it needs to have a sleep now and again. It's been going around murdering loads of people.
I'm tired.
It needs a rest. I'm tired. I'll have a hot milk and get myself to bed. So, yes.
Bath Ripley and bed.
Bath and bed, mate. So Ripley puts on a spacesuit, begins like doing a load of stuff to try and get it out. Like, what's she doing? Like, flushing the air ducts. And then it sort of comes out and goes, I was bloody sleeping, you bitch.
You bloody bitch. She pops the airlock. He flies out, but he's sort of latching on the alien, the xenomorph. He's like, I ain't going nowhere, bitch.
It's persistent.
I ain't going
nowhere,
bitch. And then she shoots the grappling hook into its middle. It's still like, hanging on. And it's a bit weird. You know, when we see it reminds me, it's very insectoid the way it moves. Like, we see the outside of the ship and we see it sort of crawling into one of the exhaust air ducts thing. And it's like the way it sort of moves, like in space. Just looks like a very parasitic sort of little creature sort of thing.
So it can survive in sort of space as well, in the vacuum of space. What is it breathing? Is it old? Was it holding its breath? Obviously ain't breathing.
Maybe. I mean, did you know that you, I don't know if this is completely true. Did you know that you can drown a fly and put it, like take it out of the water, put it back on the table, leave it, And then as its tubes, as the water drips out of the tubes, it's back alive. Like, it can be like unconscious like that for... Also, you can freeze a bee.
Yeah, I think I've read this before. Yeah, you can put a little string on it and take it for a walk. Isn't that right?
Yeah, you can. You've done that?
No.
I did it once, and then my grandma came around, and I was like, I'm not normally like this grandma.
Is this real?
So, yeah, we had a bee on a lead.
Oh.
And then my dog at the time, Dylan, thought it was a toy, and he was trying to get this bee. Eventually we let it go, but...
Grandma, I'm not usually like this. Jesus.
Yeah, but it's interesting, though. It's difficult to tie the little noose, around the bee.
Yeah. A little noose around its neck. Yeah, and then so the film, basically, yeah, the alien gets blasted off with the engine exhaust. See you later, mate. Off you go. And then Ripley records a final log entry, which isn't going to shit. And then she puts herself... Oh, here we go. It says she places herself on the cat into stasis for the trip to home to Earth. So cat's in stasis with her.
Okay, cool. She finishes the blog, posts that, and then she's good to go. And that's the end of the film. Credits roll. It was pretty good. Are you ready for some trivia?
Yeah.
Okay, number one. So it just says that many producers have professional readers, in quotation marks, that read and summarize scripts for them. The reader in the case for Alien, he wrote, "It's like what, but in space." So he references to a different film. "It's like what, but in space."
Oh, it's like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but in space. It's like, I don't know. Is he saying another horror film?
Yeah, yeah.
Just trying to think about what came before this. Did Halloween come before this?
It did.
Think of like a stalking thing. Psycho? No, I don't know. Go on. Hit me with it.
Jaws came out in 1975.
Oh, no, that's like, obvious.
It's like, well, that's what he said.
I know, but I mean, I should have known. That's what I mean. Okay. I should have known. That's obvious.
Yeah.
I've heard that. I've definitely heard that before.
You're going to be giving yourself a Chinese burn later. Stupid Ben.
Oh, an English bird, mate.
Okay, number two. So there's a phrase about the film. Which one of these is correct? In space, no one can hear you scream. In space, nobody got no ears. In space, nobody can hear you scream. Or in space, no Bobby can hear you scream.
Bobby? Like you, Bobby Brown. Or a police officer, is that what you mean? Like a...
I don't know, it's just what it says.
Are you asking me like which of these are like true? Because like no one could probably hear you cream in space as well as scream.
No, what was the correct
in tagline? Space, no one can hear you scream in space.
No one or nobody?
Nobody. No, in space, nobody can hear you scream. In space, no one can hear you. Fuck. They both sound right. Nobody.
Well, I've got written here nobody, but I'm doubting that I wrote that down right. Okay, sure, you got that right.
You're an unreliable narrator, you are.
Unreliable quizzer. Number three. What year does the film take place?
2234.
It is.
Googling it.
2122. Oh. You were pretty close. I'm just Googling the tagline to see. Space, no one can hear you scream.
Is it 2122, is it? They just literally plucked a number out of nowhere, didn't they? They went, well, it's in the future. What should it be? 2122? Yeah.
Sounds about right. Okay, so for the awakening from the hypersleep segment at the start of the film, Veronica Cartwright and Sigourney Weaver had to cover up their what with surgical tape?
Nippy noo-noos.
Correct. They had to cover up their nippy noo-noos with surgical tape so no one could see them through the white tops.
Good.
Last one, maybe a bit of an obvious one, but you know, why not finish on this? What was the alien's real name?
Bolaji Badeja, was that right?
No, not a cast. Like, what was the alien just called?
You mean Xenomorph?
Incorrect, it was Eileen. Anyway, so to grade the film...
Fuck's sake. Eileen the alien. Was it definitely female? Who knows?
No. Okay, number six. What grade will you give the film?
Is that a question? Is that part of the quiz now, is it?
It's not part of the quiz, but it is a question for you.
Oh, it's an interesting question. I was just trying to... think of this film up against like the other sort of big hitters that we've reviewed and the big hitters that I enjoy. So I probably wouldn't go for an A plus, but I'm happy to settle with a solid, a higher level, a solid A for Alien.
I went for the same thing. Maybe it's because it's called Alien. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah, so I needed to. Yeah, like A plus. It's not one of those, like, obviously, I absolutely love this film. It is superb in probably all areas.
In all the ways.
It's great, but it is definitely one of those films. Like, it's hard to, even though it's a sequel, it's hard to measure up against Aliens. It really is, because they're very, very different films. But, like, if I was going to go, I'm going to watch one of the films from the Alien franchise, Aliens I would go to probably first all the time. But this is a close second.
The way I'm seeing it is, so an A for me is a film that is like so good, so perfect in every single way that, you know, I'll watch it whenever it comes on. But an A plus, that's reserved for the films that like, oh my God, they got like what something about that film has like really like affects me in a certain way.
Yeah. One of those films that like you just have to tell people about. And when you talk about it as one of your favorites, you can ramble and ramble and ramble. And Alien is not quite there for me, but it is obviously all a very near perfect film.
Exactly. Yeah. So next week, we're not going to do the Weet-Bix. So, my chest. Next week, we're not going to be doing number one on the list. We're not going to be going to The Shining just yet. I think we're going to do a couple of weeks worth of honorable mentions.
Yeah.
And maybe one dishonorable mention. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be good. We'll see how it goes. We'll delay the inevitable review of number one as long as possible. Just for dramatic effect. Dramatic pause like they do on like TV shows when they go, and the winner is, and it just shows 9 close-ups of different people's faces for 12 minutes. We're pretty much going to do that.
But we like Dragon Ball Z fight where they're powering up for the final fight for like 12 episodes. So are you going to go first? Did you want to pick? I think you said The Fly.
I can go first. Yeah, might be a good one to do. Yeah, so my honourable mention will be obviously a film that didn't appear on the list of the top 50 horror movies ever. It's The Fly, starring Jeffrey Goldblum.
It's good as well because we haven't had any David Cronenberg films in this list, and you kind of need to. And The Fly is a perfect film. Like, it's a fucking great film. I've not seen it in a long time as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. So I might watch that. And I might watch the sequel as well because I don't know if I've seen it. So
I think from what I remember, it's in like bizarre, insane. I don't remember it being particularly good, but I remember enjoying it for what it was.
There we go. That's all you need, mate.
Yeah.
You got to enjoy life until what it is. Inevitable death.
I don't know if it's good, but you know, you're gonna enjoy it for what it is.
You know what it is good, but I mean, it's a pass of the time.
Okay, the show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com and grab a free book. Become a patron over at patreon.com/Hawk, and that's right, Cleaver. Thanks to Kovacs Cameron for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give us a 5-star rating review in iTunes and remember to hit subscribe. Once again, thanks to my co-host Benjamin Barker. Ben Errington for being a real hard dude. Benjamin Barker. Oh, Sweeney Todd.
Benjamin,
that's where that came from.
Barker.
You like Sweeney Todd?
Mr. Ben. I love a bit of Sweeney Todd, yeah. Of course I do. Yeah. Rest in peace, Johnny Depp, or at least his career. See you later then. Daddy, bye now.
Little pip.
Bye bye.
It's true.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.